From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Mr. Obuchetsky is a person who has devoted his entire life to nonviolent, peaceful protest activities on behalf of peace. If there is anyone in the world who is further from a terrorist, it's hard for me to imagine them.
New documents reveal undercover Maryland State Police officers spied on peace groups and anti-death penalty activists. We'll speak with anti-war activist Max Obuchetsky and the journalist Dave Zirin. Both were the target of surveillance. But first, the Green Party makes history by nominating the first all-women of color presidential ticket in U.S. history.
Because the corporate lobbies can come and go at will, our values get overridden, and our representatives give us something else. That's how we end up with everyone saying they're against the war and occupation, but war and occupation still gets funding. That's how we end up with everyone saying they're against illegal spying on innocent people, yet end up with a telecom immunity bill being signed into law.
We'll speak with Green Party presidential nominee Cynthia McKinney and her running mate, Rosa Clemente. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Presidential contender Barack Obama has arrived in Baghdad for his first visit to Iraq since he became the Democrats' presumptive nominee. Obama's arrival comes just 2 days after Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki endorsed Obama's call for a timetable for a U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. In an interview with the German magazine Der Spiegel, al-Maliki said, quote, U.S. presidential candidate Barack Obama talks about 16 months. That, we think, would be the right time frame for a withdrawal with the possibility of slight changes. Maliki went on to say, quote, artificially prolonging the tenure of U.S. troops in Iraq would cause problems. Soon after Der Spiegel's report was published, U.S. embassy officials in Baghdad called Maliki's office to express concern over his statements. An Iraqi government spokesperson then issued a statement claiming Der Spiegel's report had been misunderstood and mistranslated. However, Der Spiegel has stood by its story. The magazine gave an audio recording of the interview to the New York Times, which confirmed Maliki endorsed Obama's plan for withdrawing combat troops in about 16 months. In other Iraq news, U.S. forces have shot dead the 17-year-old son of the governor of Salahuddin province. The killing occurred when U.S. forces raided a home in the town of Baiji. Another relative of the governor was also killed in the raid. On Sunday, Barack Obama traveled to Kabul, where he met Afghanistan's president, Hamid Karzai. Obama described Afghanistan as, quote, the central front on our battle against terrorism. A spokesperson for Karzai said, quote, Senator Obama conveyed that he's committed to supporting Afghanistan and to continue the war against terrorism with vigor. Obama also met with U.S. troops stationed in Afghanistan.
Young people like this who are doing such excellent work with so much dedication and pride.
Streets of Kabul, many residents said they oppose Obama's plan to send 10,000 more U.S. troops to Afghanistan.
The situation is getting worse here, even worse than Iraq. If the U.S. government sends more troops here, the violence will increase. For example, when we see a group of U.S. soldiers walking here, it doesn't make us feel safe. Our Afghan forces are capable enough to ensure the security of Afghanistan. The U.S. government should focus on other needs of Afghans, not the military.
Afghans also criticized Western officials for not doing more to help the Afghan people.
There have not been any changes in the lives of ordinary Afghans. The visits and presence of foreigners has not changed the lives of the poor Afghans. I returned from Iran after 20 years there. I had the best time when I was in Iran. And now I have to work like an animal in order to feed my family. My life is worse now. What is the benefit? These Western officials coming and going.
In other news from Afghanistan, U.S.-led troops and Afghan forces killed 9 Afghan police officers Sunday after they mistook the officers to be militants. In a separate incident, NATO said it accidentally killed at least 4 Afghan civilians Saturday night. A NATO soldier also was killed in the east. In campaign news, Senator John McCain has accused Barack Obama of having the most extreme record in the Senate and suggested Obama might be a socialist. McCain was asked about his views in an interview with the Kansas City Star.
You talked a little bit about Senator Obama today.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was the most extreme member of the Senate, I think.
Yeah, that's his voting record.
Extreme? Do you mean really think he's an extremist? I mean, he's clearly liberal.
But... Well, that's his voting record. All I said was his voting record, and that is more to the left than the announced socialist in the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders of Vermont. So,
you think he's a socialist, Barack Obama?
Oh, I don't know. All I know is his voting record, and that's what people usually judge their elected representatives by.
The first U.S. war crimes tribunal since World War II is set to begin today at Guantanamo. Osama bin Laden's former driver, Salim Hamdan, will be the first prisoner to face the military commission. Hamdan has been held at Guantanamo for over 5 years. Last week, his lawyers complained about the trial, saying he was subjected to sleep deprivation for a 50-day period in 2003. A report published by the British Parliament warns Britain can no longer rely on American assurances that it does not torture. The report by the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee said ministers should no longer take at face value statements from senior politicians, including President Bush, that the United States does not resort to torture in light of the CIA admitting it used waterboarding. The Guardian reports this may have implications for extradition of prisoners to the U.S. because Britain is a signatory of the U.N. Convention, which bars sending individuals to nations where they're at risk of being tortured. Newly released documents have revealed the Maryland State Police officers conducted an extensive surveillance campaign in 2005 and 2006, targeting peace groups and anti-death penalty activists. The documents show undercover agents infiltrated meetings and events of the Baltimore Pledge of Resistance and the Baltimore Coalition Against the Death Penalty. The agents entered the name of one of the prominent Baltimore peace activists, Max Obajewski, into a federal database that tracks terrorists and drug dealers. The police continued to carry out the surveillance, even though officers never observed any illegal or criminal activity. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. An Israeli human rights group has released a video showing an Israeli soldier shooting the leg of a blindfolded and handcuffed Palestinian man from close range. The Palestinian man was detained during protests against Israel's West Bank wall. The video shows an Israeli army officer gripping a blindfolded and handcuffed Palestinian detainee while another soldier aims a rifle towards his leg. B'Tselem Sarit Mahaly condemned the Israeli action.
B'Tselem received this morning footage filmed in the village of Nialin approximately 2 weeks ago, showing an Israeli soldier firing a rubber-coated steel bullet at a Palestinian. The Palestinian has his hands tied behind his back and his eyes covered, and the soldier is firing at him from very close range, from approximately a meter and a half away. This whole event happens in the presence of a high-ranking officer, a lieutenant colonel.
The Israeli military says the soldier involved in the shooting has been detained for questioning. An army statement said the incident is a, quote, direct contradiction of IDF values and principles. A military judge at Fort Knox has sentenced U.S. war resister James Burmeister to 6 months in jail after Burmeister pleaded guilty to going AWOL. The 23-year-old soldier served as an Army scout in Iraq but fled to Canada in May 2007 while on leave. After leaving Iraq, Burmeister revealed U.S. troops in Iraq were planting equipment such as AK-47s to lure Iraqis to spots where American snipers could shoot them. The practice was known as bait and kill. Burmeister said, quote, I know going AWOL was wrong, but I thought it was the best way to stop the small kill teams. Charges are expected to be filed this week in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, against a group of teenagers who beat a Mexican immigrant to death last week. Witnesses said 6 white teenagers brutally beat 25-year-old Luis Ramirez while yelling racial slurs. When one of Ramirez's friends tried to stop the beating, one of the teenagers said, quote, tell your Mexican friends to get out of town or you'll be laying next to him. Ramirez came to the United States 6 years ago. He was the father of two children and was engaged to Crystal Dillman, who grew up in Shenandoah. And in China, explosions on three buses killed at least three people and injured 14 earlier today in the southwestern city of Kunming. The bombings come less than a month before the start of the Olympic Games in Beijing. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
Because the corporate lobbies can come and go at will, our values get overridden, and our representatives give us something else. That's how we end up with everyone saying they're against the war and occupation, but war and occupation still gets funding. That's how we end up with everyone saying they're against illegal spying on innocent people, yet end up with a telecom immunity bill being signed into law.
The Green Party made history last week when it nominated the first all-women of color presidential ticket in U.S. history. Former Democratic Congressmember Cynthia McKinney, the first African-American woman elected to Congress in Georgia, won the Green Party's nomination last Monday. She named longtime community organizer, journalist, and former director of the Hip Hop Caucus, Rosa Clemente, as her running mate. McKinney is among the most outspoken critics of the Bush administration, and one of her last measures as a Democratic Congressmember was to introduce a bill calling for the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. But McKinney left the Democratic Party late last year after serving six terms in Congress under both the Clinton and President Bush administrations. She said the Democrats had become no different than their Republican counterparts. She announced her bid for the presidency as a Green candidate earlier this year. We're joined now by Green Party presidential and vice presidential candidates. Cynthia McKinney joins us from Washington, D.C. Rosa Clemente joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Cynthia McKinney, let's begin with you in Washington, D.C. If you were elected president, what would be your first act?
Of course, the first act would be to assemble a team in the Pentagon that believed in peace and the efficacy of diplomacy. And therefore, we would make sure that we put together an orderly withdrawal, but immediate withdrawal of all of our young men and women, not just from Iraq and Afghanistan, but from the more than 100 countries around the world in which our soldiers are stationed.
And what do you make of Senator Obama's trip right now to Iraq and to Afghanistan, where he said the real war on terror was diverted?
I think it's important that any presidential candidate have the opportunity to do these kinds of fact-finding missions. But, of course, one's lifelong activities ought to be preparation for running the most powerful country on the planet. I would just like to say something about your headlines, your opening headlines. Amy, I came into this room this morning full of hope and enthusiasm for the fact that the Green Party had provided an opportunity for Rosa and me to kickstart the kind of movement that this country needs. And yet, these headlines from this morning, torture, war, violence, murder, hate crimes, I think it's clear that not only does our country need a new set of values at the helm, our country needs an opposition party like the Green Party that has the values of the Green Party so that we can finally see the values that I believe are the majority values of the American people implemented in our public policy.
Cynthia McKinney, right now there's a lot of talk about who the Democratic and Republican presidential candidates will choose as their vice presidential candidates. Can you talk about your criterion and why you chose Rosa Clemente?
I've known Rosa for a very long time. Rosa has participated in many of the congressional briefings and brain trusts that we held with respect to the counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, and the impact of the kind of disclosures that we saw from the ACLU with respect to Maryland's surveillance of people who dared to dissent. She has done that really as a lifelong activist with the hip-hop generation and understands the potentialities associated with being active and dissenting from the status quo powers and the policies of them. Rosa represents everything that is good and right about young people in this country. I'm reminded of the fact that it was high school students, university students, that changed my life in the civil rights movement. They were unafraid to challenge the status quo. Rosa comes from that very same kind of commitment and tradition.
Rosa Clemente, it's great to have you with us. Can you talk about what it means to be the Green Party's vice presidential candidate, to be a vice presidential candidate here in the United States?
I mean, thank you for having me, Amy. It's a humbling experience, first and foremost. But, I mean, I'm a South Bronx, Puerto Rican-born girl, 1972. I was in the South Bronx when hip-hop, which is still now the voice of multiracial young people all over the world, began. So I'm humbled, but I'm ready for the work. I've been in a great tradition of student activists coming from the State University of New York at Albany in the early 90s to getting my master's at Cornell University under the mentorship of Dr. James Turner, and being a community organizer with the Malcolm X grassroots movement, but again under mentorship of the great late Richie Perez. So I'm humbled, but I'm also excited because I feel that many African-American, indigenous, Asian, Latino youth in this country, mostly working class, are completely disenfranchised and marginalized from a two-party system. There's over 40% of young people that still have not registered to vote, which shows their dissatisfaction with both the Republicans and Democrats. And I really want to bring the face of what hip-hop has always been for me, a voice of the voiceless, the mic that speaks truth to power, but also uses these elements to act against the status quo and, or the powers that be.
And what do you think, Rosa Clemente, are the most important issues right now? What are you going to be campaigning on around the country?
For young people right now, the most important issues is a dismantling of the prison industrial complex, a livable wage, dealing with the AIDS pandemic that is affecting disproportionately African-American and Latina young women, a real gender equity movement, a real movement where women, particularly women of color, are not marginalized in the media or at work, and really dealing with no health care and a lack of good public education, but also a lack of now higher education. No young person in America who can go to college should be in $100,000 debt. We are supposed to be competing with the best of the best, and we have over a 60% in some cities dropout rate of African-American and Latino youth. So those are, I think, the most important pressing issues. And of course, an immediate withdrawal from Iran. And we must not be duped that a troop withdrawal in Iran could also mean a troop transfer in Afghanistan and more young people, particularly white working class youth, being used as cannon fodder.
Cynthia McKinney, the other issues that you feel are critical right now that you're campaigning on, and what is your plan in these next few months leading up to November? How are you campaigning? I know you were here in New York this weekend. Now you're in Washington, and Rosa Clemente's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'll be back in New York on September 11th with the wonderful organization, WeAreChange.org, who are planning a candlelight vigil for at Ground Zero on September 11th, and after that, a benefit, a series of benefits, actually, for the first responders who, of course, have been neglected and who have health effects now stemming from their activities in recovery and cleanup of the site. Now, I think it's important for us to note that our national leaders have decided that it's okay to spend $720 million every day
for war and occupation. That number is, according to the American Friends Service Committee, $720 million a day at the expense of a single-payer health care system in this country, like, for example, Medicare for All, like, for example, subsidizing education so that, as Rosa said, no university student graduates $100,000 in debt, as is the case with my cousin. We need to make sure that our young people are actually graduating from high school. We need to make sure that we are investing in our infrastructure and greening our economy, making sure that we are providing jobs and that there's job training and that those jobs are at a livable wage. These are not the things that the Democratic majority in Congress has ensured for all of us in public policy. Yet, they have continued to vote to fund war and occupation. And so on my birthday in front of the Pentagon, March 17th of last year, I declared my independence. And I would just like to say that it's interesting that I declared my independence from the national leadership that gave us these kinds of policies and a failure to roll back the Patriot Acts, the Secret Evidence Act, the Military Commissions Act, a failure even to provide election integrity for us in face of the fact that we understand that we've got voter caging that's going on literally right now that would deny people the opportunity to cast a vote. We still have the electronic voting machine problem. We also have the voter ID situation with laws being passed in various states around the country, making it a requirement that people provide a certain type of identification, but only if they show up on election day to vote, not if they mail in their ballot. So we're establishing a two-tiered voting system by law in this country. At one point, that was thought to be illegal, and now it has become the practice. Who is going to be there on the day after election to make sure that we have ensured election integrity? As it was in 2004, it was the Green Party that put feet on the ground in Ohio, and that's how we know what happened in Ohio. John Kerry made a commitment that 1 million black people would not go to the polls in 2004, as was the case in 2000, and not have their votes counted.
Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente, we have to go to break. We're going to come back to this discussion. Cynthia McKinney, Green Party presidential candidate. Rosa Clemente, the Green Party vice presidential candidate, the first all-women of color presidential ticket in history. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back with them in a minute. Coltrane here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting on over 700 stations on Pacifica and NPR and low-power FM and college and community radio stations on Public Access TV and PBS TV stations and both TV satellite networks on Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and on DirecTV Channel 375. And we're video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. Our headlines are also available in Spanish for any radio station to take. We're talking to the Green Party presidential and vice presidential candidates. Cynthia McKinney joining us from Washington, D.C., Rosa Clemente from Charlotte, North Carolina. Rosa Clemente, Wyclef Jean, Kanye West, they're going to be performing at the Democratic Convention. Your response?
They're on the wrong side. You know, I respect many of the rappers in the hip-hop community, but hip-hop is bigger than rappers. It's bigger than recorded artists who perform and make millions of dollars. I understand the historical nature of a Barack Obama, but I also understand the historical nature of a Cynthia McKinney or Rosa Clemente, especially being Puerto Rican and understanding the colonial relationship that my island and my people have with this country, and remembering being at Vieques on May 1st, 2005, when we kicked the U.S. Navy out. If Barack Obama is not going to talk about the issues that are affecting the people that look like him, if he's not going to talk about the freedom of political prisoners in this country, and if he's not going to acknowledge the hip-hop generation, which he really hasn't, then we as a generation must be very clear. Are we picking someone based on emotion or what symbolism looks like, or are we picking the Green Party? You know, and I encourage everyone to pick up the platform. This platform includes social justice and end to police brutality, and the list goes on and on. So I'm encouraged by a lot of young people who have not registered to vote, who've been emailing me, over 4,000 hits on my website in less than a week, saying that they're going to join the Green Party. So that's my response. We'll be at the DNC. We just won't be inside. We'll be recruiting those people that are still disaffected, and we'll be at the RNC also. So look out for us.
Cynthia McKinney, I wanted to ask you about that New Yorker magazine cover, the one that showed Barack Obama in Muslim garb, and that showed his wife, Michelle Obama, carrying a machine gun with a flag burning in the fireplace. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not surprised at anything that we see. I understand that perhaps the article might have been satire. I haven't read the article. I've seen a lot of political commentary about the cover. But, you know, if you look at the depiction of black women through in the history of this country, I'm not surprised at all at what they or any journalist might portray for black women. And then if we look at the targeted group that is that consists of Muslims in this country, I'm not surprised, basically, at any depiction that someone could dream of and think up. But what we really have to remain focused on is the fact that this country is in dire need of an opposition party. People who have values of economic opportunity, social justice, ecological wisdom, need to have—and peace, of course—need to have a place to rest their vote in so that their vote reflects their values. Right now, that is the Green Party. The Green Party is the opposition party. With over 200 elected officials, we know that the Green Party can only grow, particularly in this environment where we see positions change from issue to issue, from month to month, from week to week. We understand that there is very little that is consistent and static with the corporate parties. However, with the Green Party is grounded in its values. Now, why is it that we participate in the political process to start with? It's not about a horse race. It's not about a fashion show. It's not about a beauty contest. It's not about popularity. It's about making sure that our values are reflected in public policy. And that's why I've decided that it is now time, past time, it was past time, for me not only to declare my independence as the women who were the suffragists declared their independence from the current political order in order to create something new, it was time for me to leave the Democratic Party, which no longer reflected my values. And I think that the contradictions between what the Democratic Party says and what it does are very clear now before the American people.
Let me ask you about a quote of Amiri Baraka, who was very critical of your run. He said, the people who are supporting McKinney must know that this is an empty gesture, but too often such people are so pocked with self-congratulatory idealism that they care little or understand little about politics, i.e. the gaining momentum and use of power, but want only to pronounce to themselves mostly how progressive or radical or even revolutionary they are. Your response, Cynthia McKinney.
Well, of course, I know Amiri Baraka well. Have been to New Jersey to campaign for his son, campaign with him. And so, you know, of course, he is entitled to his opinion, and I respect him greatly. However, I do differ. As I just discussed, the definition of politics is the authoritative allocation of values in a society. And if a political party no longer or fails to represent my values, then what am I supposed to do? The people of Venezuela voted their values, and they got real substantive change. They got their values being implemented in public policy. People in Chile and Argentina, people in Ecuador and Bolivia, people in Haiti, people in Cote d'Ivoire vote their values. People in Mexico voted their values. They had an election that was stolen, but then they shut down Mexico City for 5 months. Now, what are we supposed to do? Give up on our values? No. We press our values in the political system through the process that is made available to us.
What do you mean?
The Green Party has made it possible for us to press our values in very much the same way that the Democratic presumptive nominee went before the Cuban American National Foundation and enunciated a certain set of values in very much the same way that the Democratic presumptive nominee went before AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and enunciated certain values that will be reflected in public policy. It is incumbent upon those of us who share these values rooted in the founding principles of the Green Party to press our values in the political system. What do
you make of Senator Obama's trip to Iraq and Afghanistan, to talking about a timetable for pullout? Nouri al-Maliki saying he shares his view, though he was castigated, it looks like, by the president. And Senator McCain saying Barack Obama has the most extreme record in the Senate, suggesting perhaps he's a socialist.
Well, of course, we understand bombast, and that's what we're going to be subjected with throughout the remaining period of this election, is a lot of bombast. At the end of the day, though, I think that what Maliki was saying is that nobody wants to see their country occupied. And so the withdrawal as quickly as possible from Iraq, also withdrawal from Afghanistan, as Rosa has pointed out. This withdrawal is not really a withdrawal. It's just a shift over to Afghanistan. Let us remember what the late foreign minister of the UK reminded us all of about al-Qaeda. He reminded us that al-Qaeda was the CIA's Rolodex. So let's understand exactly what we are dealing with. We need a different foreign policy. We need a foreign policy that is grounded in the respect for human rights, that respects self-determination, that respects democracy and the will of the people. That is the foundation for a peaceful forward deployment of U.S. assets and resources around the world in such a way that we are actually helping people, lifting people up. We do not have to deliver bombs and missiles and military technology and nuclear technology to countries in order to make them submit to U.S. will in fear. We can make friends with peace.
Will you be campaigning in swing states like Ohio and in Florida that could perhaps have one or two percentage point difference between the candidates?
As I mentioned earlier, we are in a situation where people can go to the polls today and their votes not be counted. We do not have the assurance of election integrity. In a situation where we do not have election integrity, I don't think it's possible for anybody to talk about one or two percentage point difference when we've got the electronic voting machines, we've got central tabulation manipulation, we've got problems with people even being able to cast their vote.
Are you concerned
about... I will go wherever there are marginalized, alienated, and disfranchised people who need the voice and the message of the Green Party.
Are you concerned about helping McCain beat Obama?
The Republicans have done a pretty fine job of stealing two presidential elections. And I would look, cast my eyes at them and the voter ID laws and the voter caging and the electronic voting machines and the administration of elections where people can actually get inside the voting booth, cast 1 million votes and their votes not be counted. That's where I would be looking. Don't look at the Green Party and suspect that the Green Party is doing anything other than exercising its obligation to provide voters choice.
And the difference between your campaign, your Green Party presidential bid, and Ralph Nader's independent presidential bid?
I think it's clear that when you have a political party, we have over 200 elected officials. Of course, I think it's also important for people to understand that the Green Party is an international entity. The former Nobel Peace Prize winner from Kenya was a member of the Kenyan parliament. Wangari Maathai was a member of the Kenyan parliament, a Green Party member. Ingrid Betancourt, who was recently released in Colombia, ran for president as a member of the Green Party. So the Green Party is making public policy in other parts of the world. The Green Party needs to have the opportunity to make public policy here in this country.
How many states are you on the ballot, Congressmember McKinney, Cynthia McKinney?
We hope to be on the ballot in at least 40 states around the country. Of course, you know that ballot access laws are very difficult, and therefore at this point remains unseen as to whether we will get more than 40 or fewer than 40. It won't be very much fewer than 40. But we would hope to be on as many ballots as possible. For example, in the state of Georgia, we haven't had the opportunity to vote for a Green Party member, period, because the Green Party has not been on the ballot because the laws are so difficult. However, in California, there are so many political parties, voters have choice.
Rosa Clemente, you wanted to weigh in here. Yes.
Just very quick. Well, one thing about Ralph Nader and Matt Gonzalez is Ralph Nader sent out his congratulations to me and Cynthia last week and made it very clear that we are not competing for votes. We have to end the two-party system. In 2003, I, along with 13 other people, helped create the National Hip Hop Political Convention. In 2004, Anna Nogueira, one of your producers, interviewed me, and I remember saying to her, if we as a hip hop generation don't make some real power moves by 2008, we're going to be in a very desperate situation for the next 30 years. I see me being nominated as a power move, not just for me, not for Cynthia, not even just the Green Party, but for an entire people who see the Green Party no longer as the alternative, but the imperative for us to live a social justice, freedom, democracy type of life. And that's what particularly young people are looking for.
And what kind of response have you gotten, Rosa Clemente, from the hip-hop community now that you're nominated as a vice presidential candidate?
I mean, it's been varied. I mean, from people who are activists and progressives in that movement, the response has been phenomenal. We have people all over every state ready to do some work. And in fact, on July 31st to August 3rd, we will be in Las Vegas, Nevada, with the National Hip Hop Political Convention. There have been some people caught up in Obama mania, as I call it, and other people that are upset, but they don't understand, I think, right now, the situation that we're in. They don't understand that the Democrats and Republicans joined forces to keep the Green Party off the ballot. They don't understand that we are being whited out of every mainstream and even some progressive media. And my question to them is always, or my response, if we are not telling the truth, if we are not about empowering the majority of the American people, why are forces that are worth $200, $300 million not only keeping us off the ballots, but not even talking about us? And again, in the progressive press, we've been whited out. Whether it's the Huffington Post or Air America, it's only been Pacifica and Democracy Now! And a couple other, I don't even call you alternative anymore. I think we are the mainstream. But why are we not being allowed to even voice our opinion? So it's been a wonderful response, I think, in general for the hip hop generation right now.
We're going to leave it there. I want to thank you both very much for joining us. Rosa Clemente, Green Party vice presidential nominee, speaking to us from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Cynthia McKinney, former congressmember from Georgia. She is the Green Party presidential nominee, speaking to us from the nation's capital, from Washington, D.C. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll be joined by the targets of the Maryland State Police, a spying campaign that went on for over a year, peace activists and anti-death penalty activists, and the sports writer Dave Zirin. Stay with us. People have the power. Patti Smith here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to Maryland, and new documents revealing police surveillance of local activists opposed to war and the death penalty. The American Civil Liberties Union released documents Thursday showing undercover officers from the Maryland State Police spied on peace groups and anti-death penalty protesters for over a year from 2005 to 2006, when Robert Ehrlich Jr. was governor. On Friday, current Governor Martin O'Malley vowed not to allow police surveillance of peace groups. The police summaries and intelligence logs obtained by the ACLU under the Maryland Public Information Act reveal that covert agents infiltrated groups like the anti-war Baltimore Pledge of Resistance, the Baltimore Coalition Against the Death Penalty, and the Committee to Save Vernon Evans, a death row prisoner. According to the documents, police monitored and entered the names of activists in a law enforcement database of people suspected of being terrorists or drug traffickers. Maryland ACLU staff attorney David Rocha released the documents at a news conference on Thursday.
What you see in the documents today is a particular individual, Max Obuszewski, sitting to my left, who is listed in the Maryland high-intensity drug trafficking area database with under the suspected crimes of terrorism. Mr. Obuszewski is a person who has devoted his entire life to nonviolent, peaceful protest activities on behalf of peace. If there is anyone in the world who is further from a terrorist, it's hard for me to imagine them. and that the Maryland State Police can think that being anti-war is a subset of terrorism is a terrifying prospect.
Longtime peace activist Max Obuchevsky from the Baltimore Pledge of Resistance joins me now from Washington, D.C. We're also joined by another target of the surveillance of the Maryland State Police, Dave Zirin, the sports writer and author of, among other books, Welcome to the Terror Dome, The Pain, Politics, and Promise of Sports. He writes a weekly column called Edge of Sports. His latest article for Counterpunch is called COINTELPRO Comes to My Town. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Max Obuchevsky, let's begin with you. Tell us how you learned about what was taking place.
You just played a clip of David Rokow from the Maryland ACLU speaking. He called me. I was in court on last Wednesday. I'm a member of the Ghosts of the Iraq War. We were arrested March 12th protesting in the Senate gallery. I have a trial September 29th. So I was in court for a status hearing. When I got home, probably about 4 p.m., David called me to say they've got this information from the Attorney General's office. This is the Maryland Attorney General's office. And he said, hope you're sitting down, because I want to tell you that you've been listed as a terrorist. I mean, I know as a longtime peace activist that I'm being surveilled, and these documents are released as just a tip of the iceberg. But to be labeled, put into a database, and accused of terrorism, and it's a drug trafficking database, that was beyond comprehension. It just indicates, in my opinion, the fallacy of the searches that are going on by our government and putting people into these databases. A lot of the questions at the press conference that day was about, have you traveled internationally? Do you have any trouble getting on airplanes and so on and so forth?
Can you talk about your work, Max? What do you do?
Well, I'm a full-time peace activist, and I mentioned earlier that I think this is the tip of the iceberg. 1996, July 4th, a group of us, a fairly large group, went out to the National Security Agency to protest the operations of the Puzzle Palace. Phil Berrigan, Jeremy Scahill, and I sat in front of a gate to protest the place. That was the first protest at the National Security Agency since 1973, when the Jonah House, Phil Berrigan, Elizabeth Kelster, and others poured gallons of blood at the entrance. That's noted in James Bamford's book, Puzzle Palace. So we decided to start that up again. So this was July 4th of 1996. So we go out there every Independence Day, or a date close to Independence Day, since that time. And that's obviously going to put you on the radar screen. Or acting with Phil Berrigan. I've been arrested with Phil Berrigan. I've joined him on many of the Plowshares actions that he took place, that he was involved in. And all of that's going to cause my name to be registered someplace. Five of us were arrested October 4th of 03 at the National Security Agency. For whatever reason, three of us had our charges dropped, even though all five of us did the same thing, try to request a meeting with the NSA director. Two of the people went to court the following August, 04, and in discovery, we finally got what we knew was going on, that the National Security Agency and other members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force were surveilling us. And I filed a FOIA request to try to get the information. They indicated, yes, we have information on the Pledge of Resistance, the Jonah House, and other protest groups, but we won't give you the information unless you pay $1,400. We had guardian angels who were willing to pay the $1,400, but we didn't think that was principled. We felt we should get this information without paying for it. So we then contacted the American Civil Liberties Union, and they filed lawsuits through Heller Ehrman, a Washington, D.C. law firm who's doing all this work pro bono, with everybody, including the Maryland State Police. The Maryland State Police informed the ACLU that they had one document. They will not release it, though, because it would reveal covert operations. The Maryland ACLU then went to federal court in June of this year, and lo and behold, the Attorney General's office released 44 pages. I firmly believe, though, there's many, many more information. The Baltimore City Police, for example, claim they have no documents on us. Well, if you carefully read the documents that have been released, Baltimore City Intelligence was always in the loop, in the surveillance, and so on. And the documents that were released in the NSA trial indicated to us that Baltimore Intelligence was involved in that operation, watching us as we gathered at the American Friends Service Committee and then traveled out to the Fort Meade, where the National Security Agency is located.
Dave Zirin, you're a well-known sports writer, have written a few books. You're writing now about the Olympics in China. How did you get ensnared in this?
Amy, they picked on the wrong sports writer, and they picked on the wrong group of activists. For more than a decade, I've worked with an organization called the Campaign to End the Death Penalty. It's a group that does remarkable work, nodeathpenalty.org. I mean, we do such seditious activities as tabling at farmers markets, organizing pickets, and trying to raise awareness about the nature of the death penalty. And I had a little group that was meeting in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And if your listeners and viewers don't know anything about Tacoma Park, Maryland, you're far more likely to find tie-dye than terrorists, far more likely to find vegans than violence in Tacoma Park. And yet still they infiltrated, still they sent agents, still our taxpayer dollars went to pay people to infiltrate and take notes on our meetings. And it's absolutely enraging. And I can only draw two conclusions from it. I mean, the first is that a lot of this Homeland Security funding is an absolute sham, that it's being used to actually crush dissent, not to keep us safer in any real way. I mean, we were talking about farmers markets, for goodness sakes, petitioning, doing tablings. And the second thing I can conclude from this is that we actually posed a real threat in Maryland. We won a moratorium against the death penalty. We'd exposed it as the most racist death row in these United States. And yet still, I think it just made them remarkably nervous because we were making some real headway.
Do you know who was spying on you?
Yes, we do. It was somebody who was known to us as Lucy. She came into our meetings. She was very enthusiastic. I remember her sitting there taking copious notes. She wasn't the sort of person who would raise her hand and ask incendiary questions. It all seemed very much like this was just another person from this liberal enclave of Tacoma Park who was interested in working with us. And I'll tell you, that's one of the most insidious things about this, and this is the whole history of counterintelligence, COINTELPRO, is that it breeds this sense of paranoia. It breeds this sense of, do I really know this person sitting next to me? Who is this person really about? And I really hope that as activists, our reaction is not to regard the people who are next to us at demonstrations with suspicion. And it's like my friend Mike Stark says, hey, as long as the police agents are carrying water, then let's not try to be too much looking at each other and pointing fingers at each other, because it's far more important that we keep our eyes on the prize. And for us, that's ending the death penalty in Maryland.
Max Obojewski, was Lucy someone who was known to you, and did you feel like you were being followed?
Well, let me also mention this, that Lucy, her first contact that we have so far that we know of was actually back in February, before the dates in these documents. She attended a meeting that Bernardine Dorn spoke at in Baltimore. This was, I believe it was February 8th of 05.
The well-known Irish activist.
Exactly.
The activist from Chicago.
Exactly. Weather Underground. So I got that information from Red Emma's, a bookstore here in Baltimore, that she was at that, but she was Anne at that time. And I went back and looked at the emails I received from her. Changed her name later to Shoup. And it's very interesting because in the documents, a lot of this information is redacted. Once they come to my quote-unquote criminal history, most of that is redacted. But there's at least one place, maybe two places in there where she's identified. Do we have a friend in the Attorney General's office that intentionally did that? I don't know. But you have to understand, though, that there was more than just her coming to meetings, watching us. We had an anti-death penalty protest when Ehrlich was being inaugurated in Annapolis, and this gentleman showed up and was with us traveled with us, came back with us. We never saw him again, never heard from him again. The presumption is he was also a state police officer following us. The sad thing is, as Dave is talking about it, all of these gatherings, there's also the Hiroshima Nagasaki Commemoration Committee. They actually came to one of our rallies where we had Habaksha speaking. The sad thing about all of this, constantly in these documents, the agents indicate that we were doing nonviolent work, that we were doing First Amendment work, but they kept repeating, we think that this investigation should continue. They logged in 288 hours. I'm a pacifist. The idea that the Maryland State Police, the Homeland Security Division, is going to be coming to meetings that I attend is beyond comprehension. Generally, in larger meetings, I always ask if there's anyone here from the FBI, the NSA, or the CIA, please identify yourself. You're welcome to participate in the meeting.
These are open meetings. You advertise
yes,
them
exactly.
for people to come.
They're advertised. There's flyers put up. The rallies are all announced. Anyone can come to our meetings. We're trusting.
Mike Stark is quoted in the Washington Post and other activists, anti-death penalty activists, if the governor, O'Malley, will now be spied on because he's opposed to the death penalty.
Right. And I think this lays out an important challenge to Governor O'Malley, because Governor O'Malley has said in response to this, he has said, well, look, we are not going to be spying on people who engage in lawful activities. I would make the case that that's not good enough. We need a full investigation of what the Maryland State Police have done. We need an absolutely ironclad statement by people in power that they're not going to spy on people who are involved in what should be constitutionally protected acts. And I'll tell you something. Robert Ehrlich, the governor of Maryland, he put his hand on a Bible and swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and then he proceeded to use the Constitution as a handy wipe in surveilling people like Max, myself, and many, many others. And I think it's got to be clear that we're going to go on offense right now. We're going to have press conferences. We're going to bring a lawsuit through the ACLU. And when this is all said and done, Bob Ehrlich and the state of Maryland, they're going to be paying for my kids' braces. Because this is outrageous that they've gone after us like this.
It's interesting, Dave Zirin. Your latest piece is about China and is about the Olympics and about repression, about serious squelching of freedom of speech of all the different countries' teams.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. And that's happening inside and outside of China. I mean, recently there have been flames of protests in many different provinces in China, from Sichuan, where the earthquakes were, to Hunan, Shanghai, Jizhou. And the common variable has been the Chinese totalitarian government has said, quote, we need to go on war footing to make sure that there are no protests in Beijing during the Olympics. At the same time, Western powers have put out the word to their athletes, you cannot go to China and raise issues like Darfur, like Tibet, like issues about labor rights, even issues of the environment and bottled water, which affect athletes directly. I mean, we're going to see marathon athletes perhaps running with masks on because they're so scared of the environmental damage that it could do to their lungs by running in Beijing. And so you've got this crackdown on dissent in China that's being mirrored by Western Olympic officials. And here at home, those of us who just want to get together in Tacoma Park and talk about fighting the death penalty are seeing similar infiltration. It boggles the mind.
The head of the Olympic Committee has warned this, the head of the British Olympic Committee, the Canadian Olympic Committee. Has the U.S. Olympic Committee told athletes not to speak out?
They're engaging in a very interesting contradictory message. On the one hand, they have said quite clearly, like, sports and politics do not mix. They've laid that down. And the coach of USA basketball, for example, Mike Krzyzewski, has said one has nothing to do with the other. It shouldn't happen. At the same time, other Olympic officials have said, well, we do sort of believe in freedom of speech, so maybe people should say something. And I think that speaks to the push-pull relationship that the U.S. has with China as both people they depend on for underwriting their wars overseas and as their global banker, but at the same time, also they're in competition with China for global economic supremacy. So you see those contradictions in how the U.S. is approaching the Olympics.
We're going to leave it there. Dave Zirin, well-known sports writer, his latest book, Welcome to the Terror Dome, The Pain, Politics, and Promise of Sports, and Max Obuszewski, longtime peace activist. From Baltimore. Both Dave and Max have been the targets of a Maryland spying campaign by the state police. They're asking for more documents and say they're suing. That does it for today's broadcast. You can go to our website for the video, audio, podcast, or the transcript. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Hildo Kudu, Sarah Monte, Angeli Comet, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Peter Curry, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.